Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their travel trailer, which they have nicknamed Bessie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews. Welcome back to our podcast. Well, this past weekend, Alara and I were in Rhinebeck, New York for the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival. As you know, Alara and I have been traveling back here the last few years to film this extraordinary event. And this year, we also live streamed it. So if you head over to our YouTube channel, you can see all the great visuals and interviews from our 2 days here at the event. So today's podcast, Alara speaks with Mary Badcock, fiber artist, wool judge, and spinner. I hope you enjoy the interview.
Would you please introduce yourself?
My name is Mary Badcock. I'm a fiber artist, a spinner, and a wool judge, and have been highly involved in the past 30 years. I've also been fielded out with USAID and Farmer Farmer to go overseas into Kyrgyzstan, India, and some various other countries. And I've been involved, I had a booth here at the festival for 33 years until I retired out from that a few years back. But I still proceed in judging at fairs and been judging here at the Fiber Festival for quite a few years now. So today we are involved in my process today that I've been assigned to is the natural colored fleeces. And the fleeces that are brought in today are either fine, medium, or long. And each fleece breed has its own characteristics. So the characteristics will include, we have our little list here that has its what is being judged on, uniformity, density, handle means how it feels, crimp, the amount of crimp is the amount of wave in the staple length, the length of the fleece, the length and the weight specific that should be normal to the breed. Generally, your finer fleeces don't run real long. Your long wool breeds can go anywhere from 6 to 10 inches. Right now, we have a card from the producer that says this fleece is natural colored. It's a Rambouillet breed, and it's under the fine category. So we're looking first for the handle, how it feels. Does it feel soft? Does it feel coarse? So this one has a medium feel to it for a fine wool. Fine is considered micron diameter. On a lot of the real fine breeds, the Merino Rambouillet have up to 120,000 fibers per square inch. So like your Pendleton wools and a lot of the wool, especially in Italy, where you get your fine wool clothing and everything else are taken from those. So I can tell that this fleece, this animal, had a jacket on it because this is the tipping that's exposed on it. That's been to the elements, the rain, the sun. And when they put a jacket on it, which helps keep the vegetation and hay and different other items that when the sheep lays down and gets up, contaminates the fleece. So a spinner wants to have a nice clean fleece so that they have very little work. They can start processing by combing or washing the fleece first before they go on to spinning it. So this one, and this is how you can tell a dense fleece when it's all together. When you have an open fleece, the fibers tend to clump and stick out more. So you know the tipping goes down deeper into the fleece. So that's gonna make a little bit more change in your final outcome in your yarn. So what we're going here, we're checking for length, and it has to be suitable with no breaks. When the shearer shears a fleece like this, you can see how nice this is. We want the shearer to make the blows on the animal so that he doesn't have to go back and leave that little stubble, because when he does that, it's second cuts, and that interferes with the final construction of the yarn. You end up getting little pills in there. So we have the weight. which would be a 5. That's our category, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that would be the back. We have our weight. We're looking at the fiber construction, the crimp. And what we're looking for the crimp, technically on the commercial end, we don't want to see more than 3 variations of crimp. Crimp is the way the length opens up on the fiber. The crimp isn't really noticeable that much on here. It's pretty compact, but it's pretty uniform on all of the part of the fleeces. So we're going to give it a 5. The density was a 5. The handle, we're going to go, it's a little bit, feels a little dry. We're going to give it a 4. The length is suitable. It has to be 2 inches or more for the spinner, for a hand spinner, to use for construction. And the weight's a 5, so it's suitable to a fleece. So this will be a blue ribbon fleece, and we'll roll it back up, and we will put our blue dot on, and if we have any comments, we'll put it on the bottom of the slip, and the producer knows. So we are going just all 5s except, which one, the one was, the handle was 4. So we can allow 2 4s to be mixed in with the blue. So that's 1. So when we get down to the longer fleeces, then you can see the real variation in the staple length and the wave or the crimp that you would actually see. And each fleece breed is used for a different type of finished product. Your finer breeds are used for, a lot of people are working on these very finely done shawls or baby wear. And when you get into the real heavy long wools like Scottish blackface, that's generally when you spin that up can be used for woven rugs because it's more of a hair type fiber, and hair type fibers do not take the dye as well as your other fibers. But this is natural color that we're working on. We're not working on white fleeces. So. You have any questions?
I have a multitude of questions. I'll try and pick a couple that are on the top of my list.
Okay.
So do you have to have experience? So this on here, it says Cormo. Might That's one it. Have to have experience with a Rambouillet to judge a Rambouillet and a Cordell to judge a Cordell?
Back in the 90s, okay, I was president of New York State Sheep and Wool Growers Association. And I worked with the U.S. sheep industry, which came to our area, and I was offered the opportunity to go to Cornell for a several-day training. They also sent a group of us, 9 of us from east of the Mississippi, went down south to the mills. So we've had a training in it and as far as grading. And so in order to get past level 1, you had to get past through 100,000 pounds of wool. So
wow.
I was going to different farmers and grading on site. Everything was being kept tracked of. And you had to turn your paperwork in order to get, so I'm past level 2. So, but I haven't been, due to family issues, I haven't been as active as I would back in the 90s. So that's where I am now. But generally when you train or you learn about it, most producers pick out a breed to start with that they are comfortable with or what they want to use for their product. And the main thing about raising sheep for fleeces for sale, where you can make your money, is you have to know that your ram is 75% of what your ewes produce. So you have to have a good ram. The fiber starts to fall out or get long on the hindquarters. So when the sheep has its fleece sheared, we have it down. We take that off, which is called skirting. So we don't include that in the prime fleece that we offer for sale for the hand spinner. So all these fleeces here today are going to be shown for sale. So we indicate what the prospects are, and then we pick out the champion and the reserve champion out of each category.
So may I pick this up?
Mm-hmm.
Is this okay? So this it says what kind of breed it is, but it also has a price here.
Okay, so the producer is saying what they want for the fleece. So when they're all judged, the stickers Can I have this, Thomas? Okay, the stickers are going to be elevated with the ribbon on top of the bags. So when the buyers line up in the morning, ready to crash the tables because they've looked around and they want to know, get that prime fleece, right? They're going to know how much that fleece was. Okay.
Okay, and does the age make a difference? Because it lists the age here. Why would a spinner or a person who knits care about that particular thing?
Well, it's almost like us folks. As we age, our hair gets a little coarser. The younger lamb's wool is more of a premier type fiber, but you also get the adults that have the genetics that show this nice, fine, long fiber, you know, that everybody comes in.
It's just itching,
you know,
to touch it.
Huh. Go, yeah.
May I touch it?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, so now I can feel the lanolin on this.
Yes. Wow. I get a lanolin treatment.
hands, I can feel it right
you
away.
You can spin this fiber. You can use what's called wool combs. It's like a square that has things, projections in it that looks like nails with points on them. And you can flick this through on both ends on that little apparatus, that hand apparatus, and you actually can spin this in the grease. Okay.
That's amazing. And the crimp is very, you look at
very
it.
Very fine.
Very
right?
fine. It's a very fine
this
crimp.
This is what, and plus we also, when we check the fleece, we check it for tensile strength.
Okay,
because you're
going to have a sweater, and if you're going to have a sweater that just rips apart, it's mm-hmm. going to make a big difference in there.
Okay,
right?
We previously had a fleece on the table that had near the end, if you held the fiber up, it had a discoloration near the end. Okay, so when I pulled it, it broke. It had a break. So somewhere in that animal's life, it had a stress, and that stress produced a break in the growth pattern in the fiber. So what happens is that in the process of the spinner working it, that's going to break off. And when they start to spin or when they wash it, it's going to make like a little nub in your yarn. And that's something we don't want, especially the spinners that do the fine, real fine spinnings for laces and things like that. So this one, that's one way of telling that it's healthy. So if it's got a break, unfortunately, it goes under the table.
Well, so are they not going to bring a fleece in that will make the cut, or are they going to bring everything and see how it goes?
Initially, the breeder should know that the fleece has to be skirted prior to bringing it here, because then they learn a lesson. You know, if it's not if it doesn't qualify, it gets taken off the table and a notation puts on it with what the inconsistencies were.
We talked to the ladies in the breed barn a couple years ago, and they were saying that when there were those massive rains and the nutritional content changed and you didn't really know it, but you find out later because mm-hmm. it looks like grass, but it has fewer nutrients in it, all of this changes.
Yes.
You might have consistency issues.
Right,
so
correct.
Have you seen a lot of that lately in the last couple of years with all the rain and hot weather and everything that we see? Do you see a difference in the consistency of the wool?
This year so far, everything looks pretty good considering we had a heavy rain in the spring. But in past years, we have seen a lot of cotting and matting, because what happens is if you don't change, there should be two jackets for each animal if you're raising the fleece for sale. So as it grows, as the fleece grows on the animal, the top layer, if you don't change the jacket as it gets longer, gets compressed.
That's
down,
what that, okay.
Down, okay. It gets compressed down and it rubs back and forth, and it actually can create a weak point in that. So the producer wants to keep an eye on the animal as it gets longer. They change to a larger size jacket. So therefore, there's no interruptions in the staple length on the fiber that they're growing on that animal.
Because isn't felting that process of making the fibers kind of grab
together?
Yes, they can.
We had a fleece here that we put underneath the table that was actually cotted. It was all stuck together on the hindquarters where the animal was getting up and down, had a lot of agitation. Of course, agitation makes felt. I was in Kyrgyzstan, and we lived in yurts, which was, they've been felting for years and years and years. And it was just amazing to see. I had the opportunity to get in Bishkek and meet with an ethnologist showing all the beautiful felting that they've done over hundreds of years. But sometimes it happens here with producers who are new, and they have to just pay attention to that. And we all learn through the process of
yes, we do.
Showing.
So now we are hoping, we are planning a trip to Britain to go and do a little bit of filming. Uh-huh. And one thing I'm very curious about is the difference in animals. If you go to see a Wensleydale in England and a Wensleydale in the United States, there are different breeding lines that, that occur over time. Mm-hmm. Are you going to, because especially since you've been around the world a little bit, do you see a difference in the same types of animals in one place and the same types of animals, the same breeds of animals in another? Mm-hmm. Or is it basically the same kind of wolf?
Well, it's basically the same. Genetics is your whole thing. Genetics. Your rams, your genetics are what's going to play into. If you don't have a good ram with your flock, you're not going to produce. You want to pick out a ram that doesn't fall out in the hindquarters. In other words, that doesn't get britchy or hairy. You know, I can show you an example, but they fall out. And so that's taking away the poundage that you're going to be earning your money for. If you take away, if you have a fleece and you take away parts of it, you can't use the belly, you can't use the head, you can't use the legs. So you have to skirt all that out. So when you're losing your weight, you're using your money. You're losing your money. That's how we...
Well, this almost looks like a buffalo hide.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, so is there just this much variation in different types of animals, or are you judging one against the other?
We're not judging it to type. Like if you go to the fairs, we judge against the other. That's what the normal basis is. We are judging independently within the breed and the characteristics that are supposed to go along with the specific breed type. And then they're independently judged for sale. So if we pick out, you know, a good one with the blue ribbons on it, then the buyers come along and they check it out. And this is a beautiful black fleece.
So is that going to ever fade, really?
No.
Or is that?
No.
No. Oh, wow.
But when you work this up and wash this, if you can see the tippings are light shaded.
Yes.
That's going to show up, so it's not going to be, the yarn is not going to be dead jet black like this.
Yes.
It's going to have a little bit of shading along in with it.
Yes. I mean, that's just gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite? What, are you allowed to say that? Do you have a favorite type of wool?
Not really. When I was teaching winning and spinning and weaving in my studio years ago, I would always say, don't deny yourself the opportunity to try different fleeces, because they all have something to offer. They all have something to offer. And I used to save all the bridge fiber, meaning the hairy types, you know. When I was working at the wool pool, working on my class certificate, I would buy some of the fleeces or the older stuff. I would save all the rough stuff and work that up, spin it up, and weave rugs with it because it had a higher resistance. You would not use merino, which is more of a fiber for clothing, for a rug. But you would use the long wolves, like Scottish blackface or Icelandic sheep or something like that.
So. Yes. So you've how many years did you say you'd been doing this particular?
Well, since the early 90s.
Has this event changed over time? Because there are now, 40-odd thousand people here that show up over the weekend, and this part of it is a little different from the rest of it, isn't it? The judging component.
Yes.
Because we have vendors with selling woolen products and felt products, and we have the breed barns where you can see the different animals, and we have the llama, you know, the sheep parade and the leaping llamas and the sheepdog trials, but this is really kind of in part where it started, is it not?
Well, way back when I first, there was no one really around to teach me. So I had to get the books out, and I bought some fleeces, and I had to start from scratch. And I got into it where everybody was making the compliments, and you should teach this, you should do that. And then it proceeded from there, and then I ended up doing a lot of showing, and I exhibited some things that, you know, turned out championship. years ago, back in the 80s. That was back in the 80s, sorry.
But this is something where it's the timeless nature of wool and working with fiber is amazing.
In the last 20 years, I would say that we've come a long way. There are more spinners and weavers now than there ever was. Back then, the numbers were way down. It became very popular. But it's something that I think I would do fine if I lived in the 1800s because, you know, it's just something that I just love to do, something from nature that you can reconstruct something and have something to show for it.
Yeah. And at this event, I've noticed there are people that have been doing, obviously, knitting and spinning and weaving for, you know, 60-odd years. But there are plenty of people in their 20s that are doing this, too. So there's this whole new generation that really is finding this an exciting thing.
Yes, yes. Even the kids in school, I worked with 4-H groups in the past, too, teaching how to spin on drop spindles because they can't afford to have a spinning wheel. And so to get a taste of it, I made Navajo spindles, which is the long ones, which you rotate the staff on your knee. You know, they love that. And plus a drop spindle where they could home, you know, work on, you know, give them bags of wool and work on something home and then turn around and maybe make a little crocheted item or a little pot holder or something like that.
And you can do all that? You don't have to have a spinning wheel? None of that?
No.
That little piece of wood?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for speaking with
us. Well, it was a pleasure meeting
this
you.
This is still, I can't stop today. Petting this.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe. This is how we keep going. And please ask your friends to join us. Please also feel free to post any comments or questions to our social media sites. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook under Backyard Green Films. Thanks again for listening.
We'd like to thank Mary for joining us today. And if you'd like to find out more information about the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival, please head to their website, sheepandwool.com. We'll see you next time with another adventure.
You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for more upcoming episodes from our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions, All Rights Reserved. Copyright 2022.